playing soccer with them during recess, and I loved their stories, and I loved the smiles on their faces when they would pronounce words and put sentences together.
Let me be honest, I expected to hate it, honestly, before I got there, but I really, really loved it.
I just feel profoundly connected to the people that I was able to develop relationships with.
They didn't speak much English, but again, they took me in, and what English they knew, they made sure to use to make me feel welcome. They said, this is your home. This is your home here. Welcome to your home.
Talma is a program that brings young professionals from around the world to Israel to teach English in largely underserved communities. Certified teachers of all kinds travel every year to all sorts of places, whether it's a Druze village at the top of a green mountain in the Galilee, the middle of Jerusalem, or the remote desert town of Mitzpe Ramon, to live a life entirely unlike the ones they're used to, meet people they'd otherwise have never come to know, and teach children who need it more than most. But that's only the dictionary definition of this program. Teaching abroad, it's an experience, a journey for those looking for something different and willing to make a jump. It's also a need. There are so many children out there for whom the difference between learning and not learning English can be everything. A life of perspective, wholeness, and career success, rather than one of squandered potential. All that's missing for them right now is the right teacher to step in. Speaking of the right teacher,
my name is Alex Franco. I am originally from Atlanta, Georgia. I did my undergrad at Bard College in New York State before moving overseas to Paris, France, where I currently live.
My name is Emily Carson. I am currently in my eighth year of education in New York City Public Schools.
My name is Tahila Bendan. I participated in the Talma Summer Program 2016.
My name is Daniel Sass. I am an assistant principal at the International High School at Langley Park in Prince George's County, Maryland.
My name is Nikki Bodner. I am a 2016 and 2017 Talma alum, and I work as a teacher and an instructional coach in ADC Elementary School.
My name is Alex Greenspan. I taught up in Beit Jan in northern Israel this summer.
Jonathan, Tehila, Daniel, Alex, Emily, and Nikki will all be sharing some of their stories with us today about their journeys teaching abroad. But of course, these aren't just any ordinary people that you'll be hearing from. Talma teachers are bright, accomplished individuals. After her summer and full year Talma stints, Tehila stepped up to a leadership position at the Hebrew Public Schools Organization. Jonathan is currently pursuing his PhD, and Alex Franco is one of the pioneers of Talma 2.0. Emily and Daniel are both members for Teach for America. Alex Greenspan was one of the first foreign teachers to enter a Druze community. Nikki Bodner may not openly gloat about it, but she was nominated for Teacher of the Year Award in Washington, D.C. Those you'll be hearing from today didn't just participate in a program. They came, they saw, and they conquered. Now they're here to tell us about not just what teaching abroad is, but what teaching abroad means. The journey of how to step into an empty classroom and imbue it with meaning and purpose. So, without further ado, let's get started. I'm Nate Nelson. Welcome to the Adventurous Teacher Podcast. In this episode, the Talma journey.
I randomly got this email in my inbox that said something with the header, teach students in Israel and don't pay for it. And when I saw that headline, I thought it was a scam because I said, how did someone find the most perfect program of all the things that I love all in one big package?
I was very lucky that when I first applied, you know, I was young. I was, God, at that point, I was like 25. I was 24, actually. Yeah, I was 24.
I left behind a husband.
But he was still here when I came back, so that's great.
So I was able to kind of leave my life behind in the Big Apple and kind of just pick up and go and be really, I guess, like spontaneous for a month.
I was so nervous, and I had gone to dinner with my best friend right before I left, and the two biggest things I was worried about was if I was going to have friends and if I was going to be able to be a successful teacher.
For all the nervousness and anticipation of leaving home, nothing really, not the application process, not the initiation, not the flight over, can compare with that first day in class.
Oh my God, the first day was insane. It was crazy.
Our very first day on the job, we couldn't get into our classrooms until about 30 minutes after the bell had rung. And that was because no one had really, I don't know if it was that no one knew we were coming or they didn't know the program was starting that day. But we literally like were standing around the hallway waiting for the Minahelet to come to school because she was the only one with the keys to let us into the classrooms. And otherwise we couldn't get in.
You know, they give you a lot of professional development before the fact, but nothing can quite get you ready and prepare you for what an Israeli classroom in the summer looks like. It was a crazy first day. It was hectic. I remember feeling like I couldn't quite get control of the class the way I was able to back home in America, which was very nerve-wracking and very, like, overwhelming.
And we got into the classrooms, and there was absolutely no paper, and there was absolutely nothing to write with. And the desks, I think, were, like, all in a big pile. And so we somehow had to direct, like, 40 students, 20 of whom signed up, 20 of whom showed up, that we somehow had to create a classroom from that space. So, you know, it was a typical morning in an Israeli classroom.
It's after a long day of wrangling a classroom of rowdy kids that you might just need a little alone time. A thousand things are running through your mind. Some teachers get back to their room feeling like the world is theirs for the taking. Others...
I felt like somebody took a sack of bricks and like slapped me with it several times.
It was almost too much to process at one time.
I need a bottle of wine. That's probably the first thing that I thought as soon as I got back. Get me a bottle or a glass of wine as soon as possible.
I think I crashed. Like, I think I got a coffee and then I went to my room and then I napped for 3 hours. And I don't think I've ever napped so hard in my entire life.
I was done. I was sure I was not cut out to be a teacher in any country. It was the 4th of July, and we were having a barbecue on the kibbutz where we were living. And I distinctly remember I made a plate of food, I sat down at a table, and I burst into tears and did not stop crying probably for the next 45 minutes. I was just so overwhelmed by the day, and the whole class had been out of control, and my co-teacher kept leaving the room to answer phone calls, and it was just, you know, I was certain I wasn't cut out for it. And Dor Pargamont, one of our Chota mentors, an Israeli, she came over and she asked me what was going on. And you know, through mouthfuls of you know, veggie burger and tears, she listens. And she goes, "Okay, but it's over now. Like, it's behind you. Like, we can move on." And yeah, that was a turning point for me.
So, what do you do at this moment when your first day didn't quite go to plan and now you're going to have to come back for day two? Luckily, there is a tried and tested solution to becoming the perfect Israeli teacher that Talma participants every year come to learn for themselves. There's even a name for this phenomenon.
And the expression is Lizrom, or to go with the flow.
You know, here in America, we're so structured and we have every minute planned for. And unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't leave room for error. And when error does occur, I think we get really upset about that, as opposed to taking that minute to just appreciate what's in front of you and appreciate that learning process with the students.
And when you're walking into an Israeli school and when you're walking into an Israeli school system, you could have every single plan that you want. And you could even have your material. You could have everything on your end that you need, that everything in your locus of control to create. But then there's the other factor. It's the system that you're working in. And there are a million wrenches that can be thrown into the process that, coming from the American school system that I come into, didn't even think could be thrown into. Things such as walking into a classroom expecting there to be 20 students and there actually being 40. Or not being able to walk in your classroom to begin with.
Probably the funniest story from my first year was there was a student playing with a soccer ball, and he was playing with the soccer ball throughout the entire day, and I told him to put it away. My coaches had told him in Hebrew to put it away, and he just would not stop playing with a soccer ball. And at that summer, at that point, I was teaching second graders. So continually telling him to put it away, and he would not. So eventually I took the ball away from him, and I put it, we had like a closet in our room, so I put it on top of the closet, thinking it's done, he's in second grade, he obviously can't reach it. And I was dealing with another situation that had come up, and I look over and I see him, he got a broom, and he was trying to knock down the soccer ball from the top of the closet in order to get it back so that way he could start playing soccer. And mind you, this is in the middle of, like, you know, of a lesson, of like an instructional period. And I just thought to myself, I was like, this would never happen back in America. But the student was, in a way, you know, being very creative. He was able to think about how he needed to accomplish the problem of getting a soccer ball, and he was able to actually implement it. If it's not working out, it's okay. It could still be a learning experience. It may be a different learning experience, but it could still be valid.
It's counterintuitive, but there's a time in every first Talmud semester when you make this same realization. Things are going awry, and naturally, you think, okay, new game plan, let's buckle down and figure this out. Stop thinking like an American. Lizrom is the key.
Standing in front of a room full of kids and speaking at them or talking to them is not going to work.
As much as we like to think of ourselves, teachers, as authority figures, it's a relationship you create with the students, and when they want to have fun, they're going to have fun one way or another. You just have to hope that you're on board too.
We played a lot of games, and I adapted it to my classes. So in religious schools, you have the boys are in their own class and the girls are in their own class. And so, you know, my boys were super competitive. So almost every lesson we had, there was some sort of competitive aspect to it. I would make it a game or a contest or something. Whereas the girls were more, they liked to work more as a team. They sort of wanted each other to win. They wanted everybody to win as a group. They weren't that competitive. So just adjusting.
The best lessons that I had were active and involved students moving and doing and creating. I guess I should say I completely abandoned the traditional classroom structure of like the teacher in front of the room. It was, if you walked into my room at any given time, you would have had no idea who the teacher was, because we were all up, we were all moving, there was conversation all over the place. In many instances, the students were in front of the room presenting and teaching one another while I was facilitating small group instruction off to the side.
So if the kids are like super jumpy and, you know, standing on top of the tables, then we're going to talk about prepositions and give them reasons to stand on the tables or stand on the chairs or underneath the table and really get them moving around. So just figuring out how to channel their energy into whatever the lesson was.
I had a day where a lesson broke down and we went outside just to get a little change of space. And they came out of somewhere with a whole bunch of water balloons, squirt guns. Apparently all of them had forgotten all their English because I, you know, said, stop, please, like, please, I'm wearing my business casual clothes. I really wasn't intending to get soaked on this particular day. But at a certain point, when you accept that you don't have control over the situation, the best thing you can do is to have some fun. So ended up this kind of phalanx formation of boys surrounded me to protect me with their squirt guns and their water balloons and cups full of water. And the girls were trying to pierce one side or another to get to me and dunk me. you come to expect teaching in America, where structure is key. You have to have structure to teach effectively. At least that's what we're told. And here there was no structure. There was no order. The only structure was this phalanx formation around me as my only defense. I ended up soaked, sitting in the middle of the field outside the school.
Once you figure out Liz Rome, it'll be no time before you're the life of the party in your new home classroom. Kids love Talmud teachers, and Talmud teachers can't wait to tell you about their kids.
My second summer, I had this sweet student named Sadine.
My first year teaching, I taught a girl Hadar.
The student that comes to mind is a young man named Elia.
And Sadine, on the very first day of my second summer, said the same thing that someone had said on the first day of my first summer in a different setting, which was, I've never met a real blondie before, which really stuck out as like something very funny for someone to say to me. And she really wanted to learn English. Her skills were pretty low, but she tried so hard. And she would come and talk to me at lunch and recess every day so that she could grow in her English. And at first, I remember thinking when she was talking to me, she would ask what I thought were like interesting questions. And then I realized the questions she was asking were using the vocabulary that we learned in class, which prompted me to actually start teaching the kids some different sentence stems and some different vocabulary. And she and I have actually FaceTimed 5 times since the summer has ended, so that she can keep working on her English. And she also sat with me and tried to teach me Arabic with success. I have my own journal of Arabic words that she made for me. But when I think about resilience in learning a language, I really think about her.
And Hadar, at the beginning, I didn't know what to make of Hadar because she just didn't talk much. She kind of hung out with her friends. She didn't necessarily seem so academically engaged, and admittedly she missed a lot of the school time. So with like, she was on scouts, and I think she missed a long weekend or something. As a result, I didn't get to know her very well. And I just remember on the very last day of Talma, it was the very last day, all the kids had left. It was their summer. They could go free and play and do whatever they wanted. And I was cleaning up the classroom, putting chairs back, like doing a more final sweep. And the thing I do remember is that Hadar stayed until the very end to help me. And she didn't have to, and I didn't ask her to. But she just said, no, like, I want to help clean up. And I was so impressed and struck by how considerate and compassionate that behavior was. No one was asking her to do it. She was just doing something that she thought was the right thing because it's the kind, right, responsible thing to do. And I was just really impressed by that and really impressed by her.
And when I set off to travel to Israel, and I'd been to Israel before, so I don't know why I had this perception, but I, in my head, when I envisioned what my classroom would look like, every student was an Israeli-born citizen of Israel. They looked the same, they sounded the same, they spoke the same. And so I was incredibly surprised to walk in on day one and see an African face in Elia. He was originally from Ethiopia and had only been in Israel for like 11 months. And so, you know, he struggled with his Hebrew speaking and pronunciation. He had a unique accent. My perception was that he was a young man who struggled to find success academically. And because we were doing something new, everybody starting from the same stage and learning English, Elia was able to find like a strength of his. And he took immense pride in being able to speak in English and teach his classmates and facilitate discussion and present in front of the classroom. He ended up opening our class performance of Modest Yahoo's One Day. You know, he sang the line, "Sometimes I lay under," right? So that was him, like all by himself, standing in front of a room full of people, not just speaking in English, but singing in English. And he did it with such immense joy and pride. And I got the sense that this unlocked like a taste of success that I hope stuck with him as he began his fifth grade year.
Now things are really happening. The kids are learning. You've shaken that early nervousness that came with stepping out of your comfort zone. And now you're fostering meaningful relationships across language barriers. You may even turn around to discover one day that you actually belong here.
My co-teacher and her family took me in as one of their own. They showed me around the village. I stayed. I had dinner there. I got invited to a wedding. I didn't end up being able to attend, but one of my students' cousins was getting married. And I know some other teachers up in Svat got invited to some weddings as well. I got to meet their parents, grandparents. Every person took me into their home and fed me as if I were one of their own and made sure to make me feel welcome.
This is probably going to be like so weird, but I think for me it was one day when I was grocery shopping. And I mean, where we lived in Mitzpe Ramon is like a super tiny, dusty town. And I mean, like, you can walk everywhere. And so I'd walk to the grocery store and I had a book bag on, and it was an empty bag because I knew that, you know, whatever you buy, you have to carry. And I was packing things in the backpack, and I didn't like stop to think for a moment, like, oh, I hope this doesn't look suspicious, like I'm, you know, trying to steal potatoes or whatever, because it's just what everybody did. You just pack your bag and then you get online and you unpack it and you pack it up again. And just, I don't know, a lot of things in the store just very Israeli. Like, you know, if I needed to grab something else, I could just leave my book bag online and my book bag is gonna hold my place in line. Like, no one else is gonna come and cut my line. I can just come back to where I was. Or if there's like a sack of potatoes and I only wanted two and not the whole sack, I know that I can just open it and take out two. So little things like that, I think just the whole experience of grocery shopping and how it's so different than what it is here, and just being able to do that comfortably, I think for me was like a sign that I had really just adjusted and I wasn't just there working, but I was like actually just living in Israel.
One particular day, they said, you know, Alex, you're going to come over, you're going to meet the whole family, and we're going to go to some of our favorite places around the village. So you're a guest for the day, you're going to eat dinner. They didn't speak much English, but again, they took me in, and what English they knew, they made sure to use to make me feel welcome. They said, this is your home. This is your home here. And then my co-teacher's siblings, two older brothers came and stopped by to say hi to me. And again, same thing. This is your home. This is your home here. Welcome to your home. There's something about someone saying, you know, your family, and then there's another level where someone goes well out of their way to make sure that you believe it, and they did everything they could to make sure that I felt like family when I was with them, and I certainly did. I would say that day singularly summarized the kind of feeling of community I had teaching in Beijing.
Tama began as a community of just 60 teachers. Today, it features hundreds of teachers from around the world, serving thousands of children in underserved communities throughout the nation of Israel. Why? Because it works. Whether it's Alex Greenspan teaching in the Druze community of Beit John for the summer, or Tehila working at a Jewish Orthodox school out in the Negev Desert for a full year, students can't get enough of their funny foreign teachers, even as they trade away their summer vacations. Talmud teachers are willing to trade away their summer vacations because they know they can't get this experience, this kind of personal and career growth, anywhere else. It's the kind of growth you can bring home with you and use to become a better version of yourself for the years to come. Like for Jonathan, studying for his PhD, or Alex Franco teaching in Paris, France, or Nikki Bodner, who, not long after participating in Talma, came back to the States and received nomination for Washington, D.C.'s Teacher of the Year Award. These aren't far-off accomplishments. They're natural progressions for adventurous young teachers who actively challenge themselves to do their job in an entirely new setting, halfway across the world, then came back with their new superpowers. Talma exists in large part for that reason. For most teachers, in fact, the only regrettable thing about taking their talents to Israel is how quickly the experience is over.
You say that and make my heart hurt. I miss Jerusalem so much. I miss it in a way that's visceral.
Delicious and cheap falafel, consistently, like unquestioningly amazing weather. You're never more than 3 hours away from the beach. I could go to Tel Aviv every other weekend.
I really miss the community in East Jerusalem. I just feel profoundly connected to the people that I was able to develop relationships with.
Just feeling like I'm part of a really special village, a really special community of people who care a ton about each other, who connect on all kinds of levels.
I miss living in Mitzpeh. Mitzpeh, I did not expect to like it before. Actually, let me be honest. I expected to hate it, honestly, before I got there. Because, like I said, I mean, I'm from New York City and then lived in Charlotte. So I'm from, like, major cities. And I really thought, like, this is a little Dust Bowl town. Like, what am I doing here? But I really, really loved it. I loved the peacefulness of it. I loved how everything, I mean, not everything, because everything isn't found in Mitzpeh, but whatever is in Mitzpeh is like a walking distance away. I loved the kindness of the people. I mean, the first week that we got there, our neighbor invited us over for Shabbat dinner. And I mean, like, little, if there was like a holiday coming up or Shabbat or anything, people would ask, do you have somewhere to go? Where are you going? You know, you're always invited. And the thing about Israelis, if they tell you you're always invited, it means that you are always invited.
After getting home, it wasn't like, all right, day's over, you know, put the shoes up, put on the PJs, crawl into bed. It was a time to make some more memories.
I loved the kids. I loved playing soccer with them during recess, and I loved their stories. And I loved the smiles on their faces when they would pronounce words and put sentences together. I've never taught elementary school, so this is the youngest student population that I've ever had a chance to work with, and they brought a smile to my face every single day.
If you're interested in hearing more about Talma, we'll be following this episode up with all sorts of other in-depth content about program specifics, what it's like living in Israel outside of the classroom, and what it's like working alongside an Israeli co-teacher. You can also check out Talma online at www.talmaisrael.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Nate Nelson. Good luck on your journey.
Let's get cracking. Better start packing. Getting on a big jet plane. Going on a mission, a teaching expedition, and you're never gonna be the same. The weather's swell, well, hot as hell, we thought that you should know. And just assume you'll share a room, it ain't the Four Seasons, hello.
Oh yes, you're teaching in Israel. You can't conceive, you won't believe, the adventure that's in store. That's right, you're teaching in Israel. Better hang on tight with all your might, unlike anything you've done before.
The kids are warm, hugs are the norm, they all love to embrace. But you'll run for cover when the class is over, say goodbye to your personal space. At night, unwind, rest your mind, or wait for weekend leave. Go and scream and blow off steam in a club in Tel Aviv. You wake at dawn, your life force gone, so sleepy it's insane. But those kids will swarm your zombie form till you're alive again.
Because you're teaching in Israel. You can't conceive, you won't believe, this adventurous endeavor. Oh yes, you're teaching in Israel. You'll be an inspiration, it's an
about education and changing.